Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us. Only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So
faster, freaker,
down.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for December 9th, 2025. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed, wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. And if you would like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box that says sponsor this podcast and you accept a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank our previous donors. I'm your host for this week. It's your old pal, Mike Spears. Case Lowe is on assignment. He'll be back with us next week. And as this is a singles episode and with a lot of Dragon Gate stuff on the network, we're going to kind of take it through this episode a little bit chronologically. Up top, we're going to talk about King of Gate, the semifinals and finals happening on the 3rd from Corcoran Hall, but also we'll talk about the other stuff that came out of that show and the build towards the 2nd Corcoran Hall show on the 16th. And then from there, we will close out this episode talking about their semi-annual triple header up in Sapporo that served as the launch of the Triangle Gate Leagues as that belt is vacated and the league is going out throughout this month. Before we get into the Corcoran show, it's worth pointing out that Case, not on the show this week, but has a excellent column up on Voices of Wrestling. I'll have the link in the show notes about our 2025 King of Gate winner and kind of the path of how we got there. Not going to spoil it for y'all right here until I talk about it on the show, but be sure to check that out if you get the chance. But from there, let's get into this. We had four Dragon Gate Network shows over this week. A lot of footage to get through, and let's just start with King of Gate 2025's finals.
The 2025 King of Gate is Johnny Valletta after the Corken Hall show from December 3rd. And I think that for me, at least, by the end of the last episode with Case, I felt myself getting talked more into Johnny being the winner. And seeing it play out, at least across Corken Hall, the semifinals and the finals, it's a interesting kind of situation coming away from the Corken Hall show. I think the way I'm going to handle this, at least running solo this week, I'm going to talk about King of Gate stuff, and then afterwards we'll talk about the other things on the show. A fun Corken Hall show. The situation I kind of find myself as King of Gate as over is that one of what at least it feels like to me is the overwhelming kind of discussions about Dragon Gate and about the way of which Dragon Gate somehow is judged, and just throughout whatever lens everyone chooses to view the promotion. I think that as it kind of relates to King of Gate this year, we have what I think overall with Johnny winning King of Gate, immediately getting his title match in the second Corken on the 16th, so next Tuesday. I really think that what we have is maybe not a situation where in 2016, that's always usually pointed to as like one of the high points of King of Gate historically. And I mean, there was a lot of really great stuff in that tournament, and maybe in comparatively the Tozawa versus Eita stuff in 2016, maybe worked on a little bit of a higher notebook level at the time. But as I like now have chance to take stock of King of Gate and at least the 2025 edition of it, I feel like that the story that we walk away from Corken Hall of Johnny Valletta beating Ishin in the finals after defeating Rita in the semifinals, I think that it is another way that this company has found a route to go with Johnny Valletta in a fashion where it is not a necessarily modern booking or modern presentation with the guy, but the promotion is now in this position where Johnny Valletta faces Madoka Kakuta on the 16th for the Dream Gate, and coming out of the King of Gate finals, this is one of the first times where I'm like considering maybe is it time to get the belt off of Kakuta and get it onto Valletta. We've kind of seen like at least in the last year of Valletta, and the further you get away from his title match against Luis Monte, I feel like that we can kind of put that one to the side now with Valletta, especially in a tournament where he had to work in a certain kind of fashion that not necessarily the Bruiser Brody kind of mold. I mean, he got to have on a show, you got to have Johnny Valletta versus Rita, and worked as probably the best version of this kind of match. And then a final of Johnny facing off against a heavyweight. We saw it versus Yoshiki Kato earlier on, like the way that he's really fun way that he adapts into it. And at the end of the show, ending with Valletta cutting a promo in mixed Maltese and English, and the crowd kind of going nuts for the idea of him versus Kakuta, and putting like the title match aside for a second, just the way that we got to this point in this tournament with a final four that, if anything, if we look at kind of the situation with Yamato in the quarterfinals, and say maybe that was where Yamato was probably going to beat Rita there, there's an argument for the upset with it. But what you have is a Final Four of Valletta, recent foreigner. He becomes the second foreigner to win King of Gate after Ricochet. Only one member of the class of 2016 and Yuki Yoshioka, someone who was not in the tournament last year because of the eye injury. And then Ishin and Rita, both of that post-COVID class. And I think it's kind of interesting that we are not necessarily talking about situations where this could have been a all class of 2016 semifinals, especially with before the tournament, of course, of all the injuries. Like, you would, one of the safest bets usually is in Dragon Gate tournament wrestling is to put Kota Minoura at least to the semifinals, if not the finals. And you probably thought that this could have been a year for a class of 2016 coming up on their 10th year anniversary. You get Yoshioka versus Skywalker throughout the tournament. This very much could have been that kind of tournament. And maybe that was the tournament I was expecting. But instead, you get one that's showing that the classes of 2021 and 2022 are in a good spot. And especially with Rita having the kind of match he had with Valletta in the first semifinal match. And I know that with Case, we were talking about who is the MVP of the tournament, and we kind of came down to it either being Susumu Yokosuka or Jackie Kamei, especially like high level matches. And the one that I kind of coming out of the finals, I want to throw their hat in the ring for this as well, is I think Ishin, although he had perhaps one of the most difficult routes to the finals, and it would be kind of easy to say that Ishin could have like cheated his way through the entire tournament. But instead, you have a situation where against the baby faces in Kamei in the quarterfinal and then Yuki Yoshioka on the Skork and Hall show, Ishin wins by knowing his opponent. He defeats Kamei on the cut pack coming out of the Torbellino JFK on the 25th in the quarterfinal show. And then on Korkin, he defeats Yuki Yoshioka with a inside cradle coming out of the high fly flow as a huge corner shock pop. And when you have that combined with the kind of match that they had in the King of Gate finals, I think that maybe Ishin is the answer to who actually ends up being the real MVP of this. So let's talk a little bit more in depth in the matches themselves. So they open up the Korkin with Johnny Valletta versus Rita in one half of the semifinals and the other half being Yoshioka and Ishin. And I just, the way that they, Rita in this performance with Valletta is basically everything you would want to see in a great undersized baby face, maybe not necessarily one of those classic David versus Goliath matches, but a reality that Rita starts off with a fantastic start, doing a head scissors, pulling Johnny to the outside, doing a cabrata, and then the running tornillo, and then from there going into Rita having to sell, and that's as we would expect with this, and just with like the crowd connection of Rita and Valletta at this point. Now he's working more of the traditional Valletta that we've seen in this match, but the timing that these guys had for like the right time to have Rita get the big near falls and added emphasis to, okay, Rita advanced over Yamato because of the stinger. Yamato was fine. He wrestled on this show, not in a long match, but he wrestled on this Korkin. And they using that to play off of how in this match with a great sell from Valletta on the Colcalero shot and buying and having a Ritanic near fall that the entire building bought into, Rita basically going around on a powerbomb attempt after he was powerbombed over the top onto Love and Peace itself. And it just was exactly what you would want in this kind of match. And then the finish came with Rita kicking out of two lariats and the claw slam and the King Kong knee dropped for Johnny to win in advance to the finals later on in Cork. And I was 3¾ on this. For like time and place and what you would want to do in a semifinal match, I thought this was exactly kind of what you would do with this. There's nothing I would necessarily change with it. But I do kind of feel like that maybe you have a prolonged version of this match, maybe. And maybe that prolonged version down the road isn't as necessarily good as this. But I feel like whereas in the past with Johnny and Rita, it was pretty much Rita trying to outspeed him until he gets caught and squished. This one was a lot more of a competitive effort. And yeah, I thought that for Rita concluded a really strong King of Gate campaign that ended up with him maybe unintentionally being a semifinalist and being into the tournament until its last day. The second semifinal coming right after this, Yuki Oshioka versus Ishin. And this one, they were really kind of worked it with a nice clip, but then going into the Yoshioka self-ass section of it. And as a Yoshioka defender, and as someone that I think Yoshioka, when the crowd is with him, is a special kind of thing with the way that he is able to sell and then the timing with his comeback with this. But instead, what you had was a match where Yoshioka took the full brunt of Ishin, maybe not getting the Jinchu and the death penalty, but felt like he was about to comfortably put him away. And then at the moment of the high fly flow, Ishin hooks him in it. And it's just Ishin in this tournament, a real thinking man's heel. And it felt completely deserved in the way that Yoshioka, at least for me, that's the guy that for the last 10 months I thought was going to win this thing. You played off that expectation really well in the finish. And then what the greater story of Ishin throughout this tournament with the baby faces that he's had, he hasn't necessarily cheated unless he really had to, such as his match of like El Kakui. He's just been able to kind of work somewhat clean throughout this tournament. And he was able to get the win here in this. There was a good comment and story from Jay on commentary about how Yoshioka, when he won in 2022, was before they bought this brand new trophy that is the size of Johnny Valletta. Legitimately, Johnny might be about 2 inches taller than this thing. So it's a near 6 foot tall trophy. And when Yoshioka was out and recovering, he would look at his, I guess they do actually give them trophies, because at least Yoshioka would look at it on the shelf and say, man, I really want that big trophy. I should have that big trophy. So that was kind of like a nice story to have like built into this match. And the look of Yoshioka as Ishin is celebrating the win and is going to the back, real despondent. He still has that win over Kakuta in his pocket. We have to see where that will go, but it might be a situation where he has next at Uno, Dos, Tres. And then the final, Ishin versus Johnny Valletta. Liked how it was set up of Valletta just running through him to start and having a 3-minute claw slam and already attempting to go for the King Kong knee drop, and that leading into the kind of necessary bit of Gajah Dokoro and Saipatra happening at ringside, and then a more controlling Ishin kind of section before that. We really get to see the full breadth of Ishin's kind of offense, which is really impressive given the amount of size this guy has put on over the last year since dropping the Brave Gate. He's still able to really fly around as like the second coming of Dick Togo with like his cannonball taupe through the rope. He does this double stomp and frog splash combo that was really impressive, and the same thing, just kind of gnarly seeing how hard he was like landing in on us, and it made the Ishin air falls at least feel completely deserved in the manner. And he ate a gnarly suplex into the corner pad, And that led to the scenario where Ishin then finally, having to dip into the heel tactics, gets a mist, manages to cover himself with the mist, Johnny Valletta in the mist, kick out of the Tiger Driver. He gets the German suplex as his big near fall for Ishin, a King Kong knee drop near fall, and then from the top rope, the super King Kong knee drop EX. So we've seen him do the double, the second rope knee drop before, but this one was the top rope variant. And I just enjoyed how this was laid out, and especially getting invested into, like, okay, Ishin is not just going through this, just doing unsatisfying M2K heel matches. He's kind of working as this thinking man's heel, and he ran up against the one person that you have to cut off his head to kill Johnny Valletta. And that does mean that afterwards, Kakuta called out, kind of bemused and up for the challenge of Johnny, and GM Ryo Saito makes this for December 16th. And it was really kind of surprising to see how much the crowd was into Johnny on the promo. I mean, we've known for months and leading up to the Z-Brats turn and the Saipatra Gato Dokoro split, we knew that Hamare was one of the most popular guys in the promotion, at least at this time, and that Shun, even though being a three-year heel at that point, was seen as that kind of popularity. So it does make sense that Johnny Valletta, especially as a tweener sliding babyface Johnny Valletta, it makes sense why this crowd would be into it. But I was kind of taken aback by how much they were into it, and they were into Valletta versus Kakuta. And I don't know if it works out with Case's schedule, and by the time that this match happens in 2 weeks or 8 days, actually, I feel like I need to maybe be a little bit talked out of the idea of Johnny Valletta maybe getting the win here and pulling the old Shingo Takagi Susumu Yokosuka title switch situations before you get to maybe Yoshioka. But if you do with Yoshioka with a Johnny title turn, a title reign in between, Yoshioka is not going to beat Kakuta as like a V0 and then have two straight V0s. It doesn't work that way. But at least it's going to be interesting for the kind of matches that Kakuta has had as heel, as especially as champion. I know I'm a little bit higher on his title win against Shun Skywalker than Case was. And I do feel like that there is a... There's potential to have a kind of special match with Johnny Valletta on the 16th. And I do kind of think if Johnny Valletta has the good Dreamgate match and has a 4-star Dreamgate match, I was 4-flat on the tournament finals, by the way. But if Johnny Valletta is able to go just 4, like, let's not be ridiculous here and think that Johnny Valletta is going to somehow have a match of the year contender to close out this year, but let's say 4-star match. I do think that at that time we should take and put aside that first title match they had with Luis Monte, and maybe say, instead of saying, hey, Dragon Gate figured out Johnny Valletta except for this one time, we say, oh, Dragon Gate has figured out Johnny Valletta and they've adapted through the times. Because at least for me, as we move into December and the Triangle Gate League that's underway right now, I am my calendar, I have the 16th already double underlined and ready for it. And I don't think that by the time, if you were to travel back in time when Johnny Valletta first started doing these tours in Dragon Gate, I don't think, and I think it's almost been about like exactly 2 years, I don't think that I would believe you if you're saying, hey, Mike, in 2 years, you're going to be just on pins and needles for Johnny versus Madoka Kakuta. I don't think I'll believe you if you told me that, but that's where I am at least for this. And let's take a look at the rest of the Korakuen show. I thought overall it was a strong enough Korakuen. So the rest of the King of Gate Final Corican, 12-3 was the date on it. Attendance, 1,051. And looking at a chart that John Carroll put together about the 2025 Coricans, that's below average for the company. I do wonder, though, if this is one of those split week or those one of those split month situations where the second Corican and there's an expectation that it will draw a bit higher. I do think that at least with the response in building, that Kakuta versus Valletta does feel like it could be at least for 2 months, for 2 weeks built, hot enough match for it. So I'll be interested in seeing that. But I do know this year, whereas in the past, you could kind of expect that the second night in 2023, and especially pre-COVID, that that would be the case, that the second night does better than the first night. That's not really been the case, at least off the just thing off the top of my head this year for the company. But as I said, it was a fun cork, and it kind of was a cork in that if you put the King of Gate stuff to the side, it was kind of serving a couple masters in an interesting kind of way. So the company straight from here went to Hakodate on their death tour and essentially had to be in Hakodate by morning because of a ferry ride to get the bus and the bring over for it. But both the Triangle Gate League going on right now, it did definitely, at least we feel like for me, that this was doing the staging that you would want to have for the tournament, and especially with the idea that that you're going to be having the tournament start over the Sapporo trip. And similarly, you had this other kind of situation happen where in some of the more inconsequential undercard matches, you got to see established units with others, and in a way you could maybe call it a little bit of a scouting trip, and I thought that that was kind of a nice little bit of spice. So we talked about the King of Gate matches, so we're going to dive back in with match three. This was D Courage, Dai, and Tanaka, along with Takashi, Daiki, Yanagiuchi, and Kazuma Kimura versus Love and Peace, everyone else other than Rita, Hyo, Benkei, Jackie Kamei, Mochizuki Jr., along with Hoho Loon, who Hoho was doing the peace signs and was a little bit off with his timing with it, but we love the effort that he showed there with that. And I thought that this was a fine enough like just undercard 10-man attack, not a whole lot to it, other than you got a good solid bout of Kimura throughout it. Kimura's continuing to look strong in a finishing stretch that felt a little bit spicy between Mochizuki Jr. And Daiki Yanagiuchi. The two of them, I feel like for this underclass of guys in like the 2024-2023, where they aren't like, of course, at that point of your Ritas and Ishins, that out of that grouping, Junior and Daiki, and it might be because of their flexibility and physical ability, the two of them, it seems like that they're able to do the fastest and spiciest stretch. And that's what we got there, concluding with one of the prettiest bridging suplexes that Junior has done in recent memory. After that, Jiro Shinbashi from the Sugiwara Training Systems was back into Tokyo on a business trip, trying to network and try to bring business into his firm. And this time he was up against Punch Tominaga. And really what you had with this was the Jiro Shinbashi match. It kind of worked a little bit differently with Punch Tominaga, and more so that Jiro was able to do a little bit more offense on him. The crowd still just enamored by the guy. Big boos for Punch for breaking the umbrella. Punch wins with a lunchbox shot, and I have to say, as someone who is who will defend Jiro Shinbashi to the end of the earth, this was probably the one that was the match that kind of overstayed its welcome a little bit. Not bad whatsoever, but I think also against Punch Tominaga, beggars cannot be choosers. Natural Vibes and El Kakui went up against Paradox and Luis Monte, and this kind of was the outsiders tryout thing. Natural Vibes trying to get El Kakui to dance with them, and not ever really getting to that point. And I think the thing that kind of surprised me with this match was at like a certain point that the pace was a lot more up than I thought leading into it. And I really, that at least for a match on the show just kind of thrown in, it worked pretty well. But what you kind of had at the end was the fact that UT is in the Triangle Gate League with the remainder Natural Vibes. He's going up against essentially Hulk's the only person on the Paradox side that's on in the tournament. So UT needs to look strong. He wins with passion against Kagetora. Fun enough 8-man tag. And then after an intermission, Yamato and Dragon Kid of Paradox versus Shun and El Cielo of Psypatra. And you have this essentially be a El Cielo show. This one only went 5 minutes, shortest match on the show. And it was another example of El Cielo kind of being put in a position to kind of, with him and Shun, who's already had Yamato's number throughout 2025, ate the both of them kind of up. And the thing that watching Cielo at this point that always kind of rings in my head, that if our assumptions are right, Takuma Nishikawa's favorite wrestler was Ricochet in Dragon Gate. So the way that he flips and moves, it makes a whole lot of sense. The finish was the Bible attempt from DK on Cielo that he just turns it into his spinning tombstone, pins him 3. There we go. There, Gajah Dokuro versus the Torimon Generation was the semi-main event of the Korakuen show. Kakuta Kai, Yoshiki Kato, Kota Minoru, and Jason Lee versus Masaki Mochizuki, Don Fuji, Susumu Yokosuka, Yuzushi Kanda, and Ginki Horiguchi kind of played in a way of the now further entranced biggest bad team in Dragon System history, according to Gate of Nostalgia. Time for them to beat up on some old people. And that's what we ended up having, playing into a finish with Horiguchi going for the back slide. Great hope spot with him in there for it. But instead, it's Kota Minoru taking out the guy who filled in for him for the King of Gate tournament. Got him with the gong on this one. There was a fun backslide interrupt when Kakuta was down for it that Minoru Lee just intercepted it, turned it into a wheelbarrow slam. And it just was kind of the type of match that you would expect to have in the situation. And with, of course, Gajah Dokuro in the Triangle Gate League and Kai, Jason Lee, and Kota Minoru being that team, Minoru getting the fall made all the sense in the world there. And it was kind of like a nice, fun thing to have, like, the Torimon Generation guys try to... I did try to all unite to take on the bad guys, and it worked out, and I felt like in a pretty successful fashion. So overall, this Korakuen, and there was no real stinkers on it. It is a kind of a change of expectations given the fact that you have 3 tournament matches on the show, and this was really the King of Gate Korakuen, and the rest of it was preparing for the Triangle Gate League.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Moving to Sapporo from this last weekend, three nights, the 5th through the 7th at the Ione Soccer Arena. And I'm not going to go match by match through these just because that's going to be me reading results from three shows. But I think that overall you had a couple things accomplished during this triple header and within the parameters of doing three shows in 3 days in the same building while you have to kind of cater to the Hokkaido locals and an impasse that usually is making the weekends all about BB Hulk and KZ. And instead, I felt like that they handled it in a smart manner. When you have something go on during this weekend at like the Triangle Gate League, and with that, you conveniently then were able to put KZ in the main event on night one, Hulk in the main event on night two, and then have both of their teams in the main event on night three. And really, when I look at this, these 3 days and the shows, I found them all to be a pretty pleasant watch. I think the first night might have been a little bit on the weaker side of the undercard things. I think that really, you ended up having a good group up in Hokkaido that kept things interesting. You had a little bit more of Luis Monte teaming with D Courage, and you just had a little bit of something in each of these shows that provided a little glimpse into something else, with the first night getting Kazuma Kimura versus Yuki Oshioka, the second night the hometown trainee Koki Oshima having an exhibition against Mochizuki Jr., and then on the third day getting the only appearance of Jiro Shinbashi over this Hokkaido trip. And I think that that's all kind of smart, having like different things on these shows. I know that it's a lot of the people that end up going to these shows are on the Dragon Gate fan trip, so it provides a level of spice to it. But really, when you like look at these three shows and what to take from them, it's the Triangle Gate League and the accelerated build towards Kakuta versus Johnny Valletta on the 16th. And really, outside of that, everything was kind of pleasant. There was a fun six-man tag on the opening night on the undercard, but really everything was in service of either the Triangle Gate tournament, the hometown theme, or building to this Dreamgate match in 2 weeks. And talking about the Dreamgate stuff first, so Shun Skywalker teamed with Johnny Valletta exclusively during these three shows. There was no LCLO, which felt about right, given how they've kind of protected CLO, and CLO doesn't tour as much with this. And this allowed scenarios where basically you're allowing Johnny Valletta and Shun to look somewhat strong. And I think more often than not, it kind of allows them to build up a feud. You have on the first night, Shun and Johnny just run through BB Hulk and Yamato, which is in 5 minutes. And you have the manner of it that pretty much you have the beatdown of the local guy, Johnny, just looking incredibly strong throughout all of this. And you have that contrasted with Yamato continually being one of these like giving guys in this year as it relates to Shun Skywalker in 2025, when throughout the calendar year, you have this guy who has been the top champion in the company, the ace of the company. And he's been dominant other than facing this one guy. And you have that aspect play into this match a lot. So Johnny wins that match with the King Kong knee drop on the first night on the 5th. And then you move to the 6th and you get a direct Gacha Dokuro versus Saipatra tag. This time it's Ishin and Kato versus Shun and Johnny Valletta. And this time you have the big crowd brawl. This one's only five. This one does not go long. Like, they were very pointed about the Johnny Valletta matches being very short throughout these and pretty dominant for him, where they're doing the big old crowd brawl, and then you have right before the 20 count is about to expire, Kakuta attacks Johnny Valletta, who is on the apron, for the double count out. And from there, Kakuta cuts a promo building up the feud. Valletta beats up Ishin a little bit more in Young Guys. And then you get a direct you get a direct tag in the semi-main event on the third night, the Kakuta teaming with Kai versus Shun and Johnny. And Valletta is the Flying Burrito body press, the Manny Fernandez special, gets the win in less than 5 minutes. And it's such a interesting way of how they've really built up Kakuta as a champion since the heel turn, and how he's basically been the person who has outright destroyed people in these build-up matches, and they are the ones that eat like this abrupt destruction. And this time Valletta pins Kakuta in under 5 minutes, and then afterwards Johnny Valletta cuts an completely intelligible English promo, which is one of those things that I like the fact that Johnny Valletta, maybe it is just that no one speaks Maltese, and that's why he is so kind of angry, because Johnny Valletta saying, hey, I beat you in under 5 minutes. Imagine what's going to happen to you next week in Cork and Hall. And I am seated. I am ready for this. And I thought that that was a really effective way to treat this triple header. Matches where a lot of people just kind of having a little bit of an on the easier side, or more so not necessarily doing a lot of things in that are like the major build stuff. You have this nice Dreamgate build that I was already hyped for Kakuta versus Valletta after King of Gate, but coming out of Sapporo, I think they did a really, really effective job of kind of inverting that Kakuta domination that he did up against Shun Skywalker and Benkei, and instead now you have him entirely on the back foot. So the other major thing happening in Hokkaido was the Open the Triangle Gate League to find new champions. They'll be decided at the end of the year Kobe Sambo Hall show, but we have a Trios League to fill out this month. And we had, as I mentioned earlier, we're in Sapporo, so you're already trying to get KZ and Hulk in the main event. And in this way, I felt like was a pretty effective way of doing so. So we had three Triangle Gate League matches, and as of the time recording, we have five of them in the books. After I'm done breaking down these matches, I'll go through the results in Sendai and Yokohama and where we kind of sit coming out of the week of hell. And on the first night, on the 5th, it was Natural Vibes. The Natural Vibes team, KZ, Strong Machine J, and UT versus Gaja Dokro, Kai, Minoli, that's Kota Minor, and Jason League in the opening match. And this one really was built around the hometown style match for KZ. A lot of the heat on him for throughout this match. And then at the right time, you have as soon as the comeback starts, what kind of pairing that you have in the between these two teams. Which team has had like sneaky great chemistry dating back to the Tri-Vanguard days? Why, that's UT and Kai. And they had a fun enough sequence in here. And as a member of the Kai Respect League, I feel like it's worth just stating, like, Kai has been really fun when he's had either teaming up with or going up against UT. And it gave enough spice with this to get this past just being a simple hometown match, and also for like Natural Vibes, for where they are, them coming out on the first match of the league. They get the win as KZ turns the Maximum Driver from Jason Lee into the Skyda Schoolboy to get the win. So that puts Natural Vibes at 2, Gaja Dokro at 0. I think out of the matches, none of them were notebook for me. The Triangle Gate matches, firmly, I have 2 of them at 3.5, or I have 2 of them at 3.75. Another one at 3.5. And it's all solid stuff. But so we start with Natural Vibes leading after the first night. Second night, D-Courage, Yuki Oshioka, Dragon Daya, and Ryo Yatanaka versus the Paradox team of Yamato, Dragon Kid, and BB Hulk. And as you would expect, this is a Hulk-focused match. And I think that there are times that we kind of get into this cycle where it's like, oh, for the better part of the last decade, we recognize that Hulk is a physically diminished worker. And instead, what you kind of have with this is you open up beating down a Hulk, and then all of D-Courage decides that they kind of want to pick apart Dragon Kid. And I think that at least for this kind of match, when Hulk will get the win in the end, they're like, but with everything all on the level, right way to move. A lot of gnarly DDT bumps caused by Dragon Daya over these shows. This, and then also in the night three match that he had, just spiking people, just doing a whole heck of a lot. And this match kind of, because really this set of three shows being based around Hulk and KZ, Natural Vibes, and Paradox naturally because of that, kind of was the one time in this like whole trip to Sapporo that I felt like, oh, it's D-Courage, the three of them in the ring together, kind of felt a little bit awkward in a way, maybe only because we've been seeing like Tanaka teaming with Monte and a lot of other stuff happening, and then of course Tanaka being out for a month. But this does kind of feel like, and at least through the first few matches, they're kind of positioned this as like, this is the D-Courage swan song, or is this the D-Courage finally coming together across a league where they are now, as of time of recording, at 0-2 at the bottom of the table, scrapping back for that. Just like an interesting kind of moment, because you have D-Courage at this real crossroads as they enter this tournament. Whereas Yamato, DK, and Hulk, they're just as good as they usually are. And Hulk, I felt like you were able to get some of the better parts of him in this. We get a win right at the 3-minute left call. So all these matches are 20-minute time limit, and that plays into what happens on the third night. Hulk does the South Row Jackknife to get Paradox at 2. D-Courage is at 0. He gets it right at 3 minutes. And that's where we are going into the night three match, where it's Natural Vibes versus Paradox. And in this match, both of them, by virtue of being the winners of the first two matches of the league, being at 2 points, and this match ends up being a time limit draw as they tease everything that was leading in the finishing stretches in night one and night two. It comes into play in night three, whereas Hulk looks like he's going to go for the South Road Crucifix at a time. There's a kick out of the Sky to Schoolboy. The finish here is KZ converting the EVO into a spider twist as time elapsed. That puts them both at 3. And I think like using it as the climax of like 3 days in the same building, this was really, really strong stuff. And it does kind of, in a way, put you in like a phrase of mind where, okay, Natural Vibes, they might be able to win this. And this is yet another time where Natural Vibes feels like that they're on like the brink of destruction. Yeah, we are in like the, I guess technically it would be 30-day countdown for possible Shimizu, but you have the three full-timers in the league. They're at the top of the table. Everything is looking up for them, whereas you look at D-Courage in... Let me make sure I get which night this happens right. So the matches in Sendai, D-Courage loses in Sendai to Gajah Dokuro, and then Gajah Dokuro beats Love and Peace in Yokohama. So Gajah Dokuro is actually the leaders coming out of this first week. I don't know if the Sendai show or if Yokohama are going to hit the network at this point, but that's where we are in this tournament. I think it's pretty strong stuff. I was 3 3/4 on the first night's main event, Natural Vibes versus Gajah Dokuro. And then D-Courage versus Paradox, and Natural Vibes versus Paradox, I was 3.5 on. All right, last things on Sapporo before we preview what is known for corking on the 16th and get out of here. Koki Oshima, as I mentioned, the rookie had a main show exhibition match rather than the future matches on the second night versus Mochizuki Jr. And I have to be honest, this was a not bad exhibition. Oshima has always looked strong enough and solid enough that I think it's kind of passable. It does kind of seem like that after doing this exhibition, now the question kind of gets pushed to the back burner about him doing that in his hometown. I think when you already have Kimura and Shinbashi debut in the year and to close out the year, the push that you would have for Oshima and Tsujiguchi is a little bit more lessened, in my opinion. So I think that it'll end up okay with him, though. It does kind of feel like he's sticking around as a trainee a lot longer than one would like. Jiro Shinbashi had a really fun match against Genki Horiguchi in the on the 7th, on the 3rd night. Not a lot to the Shinbashi matches, really. I feel like at this point, he's still like such a fresh act that I feel like you're able to do some, you're able to kind of refine it down here. I think it was really kind of pointed and smart to only have one Shinbashi match on this tour, not have him be going, okay, Shinbashi versus Kanda one night, Shinbashi versus Luis Monte another night. No, we don't need to be doing that right now. Having him up against Genki does get you to invert the rubber band spot, which I thought that was a nice, funny little like twist there. Jiro does, when he does his rope walk spot with the umbrella gets broken at Korakuen. I think he doesn't open up here, but he starts posing while he's doing it. And I think that was just a really kind of funny enough thing, and it kind of broke up these shows, having at least a little bit of Jiro going through there. All right, looking ahead, before we get out of here, we only have two matches so far announced for the Fantastic Gate show on the 16th. The Open the Dream Gate title match, Madoka Kakuta versus the 2025 King of Gate, Johnny Valletta. And I think they've been really effective in the build, as I talked about with Sapporo. Coming off of the Yokohama show, Demus makes an appearance again in the promotion, stopping by once again. Mainly being working DDT over the last like month or so, but scores a win on Jackie Kamei after Monte got the win over them in Cork and Hall, and now it is official. The Open the Twin Gate championship match coming up on the 16th is Jackie Kamei and Rita versus Monte and Demus, and I think it'll be. You have three guys here who have great chemistry with each other in Kamei, Rita, and Monte. The quality of the match, at least 75% of it, no worry, no stretch here. That's going to be fine. I'm intrigued. Demus and Rita together is something that it raises my eyebrow, but I think it can work out pretty well for them here. And at least for like with that and those two matches, I don't know if you really see the need to build anything up for this show. I do kind of think that, yeah, King of Gate on one show, having Dream and Twin on the second one feels about right. It does, though, kind of feel like that this is a place that if Doi Darts was still a thing, this would be like the right thing to kind of add to this show, but that's just not the world we live in anymore. So not that, but I would assume we have the entire schedule of the Triangle Gate League that's already been announced, and it does not, looking at this, okay, so there's one other match. I just had to pull this up to confirm this. There is one Triangle Gate League match on that show, so we do have three matches announced. It's Natural Vibes, KZ, Strong Machine J, and UT at 3 points versus Love and Peace, Benkei, Hyo, Mochizuki Jr., who come in at 0 points at that point. There's two other matches throughout the week before that. And I feel like when I look at how the rest of this tournament is kind of laid out and what we have left. So saying Gajah Dokro sweeps the two untelevised matches this week. They're at four. Paradox versus Love and Peace. Paradox at three versus Love and Peace at zero at Ozaki, happening earlier this weekend. And then in Fukui of Paradox and Gajah Dokro. And I think that Paradox versus Gajah Dokro, Max, ends up probably being the way that you you get Gajah Dokro to six. And then probably at that point, you're able to, through tiebreakers and whatever, eliminate Paradox out of from that. Because in Kyoto, so next weekend, the last match of league play is D-Courage versus Love and Peace. So D-Courage probably has to win its remaining matches to get to that point. But it'll be interesting to see how they kind of book this out here with that finals in Kobe. So we do have those three matches for Cork in that league match, along with the Dreamgate and Twingate match. And I think that's going to end it on this solo episode. We'll get back with Case next week to talk about what goes on in this Cork and Hall show. Be sure to check out his article on Johnny Valletta that went up on Open the Voice Gate. Not Open the Voice Gate. It went up on Voices of Wrestling this week. So be sure to check that out. We'll be back with you next week. You can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. Case is at _ in your case. I'm at Fujiheya. Thanks for listening to Open Voice Gate. We'll be back with y'all next week. Take care, everyone.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.